Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is a Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Yeah, and today we're going to chase this train down. It's the 310 to Yuma.
If we can get to it, man.
That's right. That's right. It's hard to get to the train sometimes.
Yeah.
It just is.
Yeah, the traffic is especially deadly in this scenario.
Extra deadly. Extra deadly. Yeah, so this is episode 179. And the version of 310 to Yuma we'd like to talk about today is the 1957 version, which I'm assuming is the original version.
Yes.
Directed by Delmer Dave. I'm not sure it's Davis. It's D-A-V-E-S on IMDb. So Davis or Daves. Yeah. One of the things that jumped out at me is that this is from an Elmore Leonard story.
Yes.
Yeah. So the Elmore Leonard story, I looked into it a little bit. It's from 1953.
Okay.
And it was published in Dime Western magazine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
Heck yeah. Heck yeah. So have you read the story?
No.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
This is a movie that my mom always just said, it's excellent.
Mm.
And so finally, we watched it, and I was just blown away.
Me too. Me too. This is the first time I've seen it. I had seen the new one.
Okay.
But had very dim memories of it because it was free on Amazon. I did watch the end really quick to see what they did of the new one. Yeah. So
how was it? Was it playing?
It wasn't as good, in my opinion, but, you know, I didn't have all the buildup. There was a lot of, you know, flashy gun spinning and things like that that were not in this movie. You know, this movie was about the story. It was about the people. And, the other one had some of that other stuff, some of that Young Guns type of attitude in it, the new one had.
Right. And after we watched this, which was maybe a year or two ago, I remember looking up the Wikipedia summary for the new one because we thought, oh, we should watch and see what that's like. And the more I read of the summary, the more we just went, no, because they had them going through, like, you know, a camp where the railroad's being built and running into Indians, and they were doing all these different things that weren't in this story at all and were unnecessary to the main plot, really.
Yeah, yeah.
And when I was talking to Rose about that, right after I rewatched this, and she watched it with me for her first time of seeing it, she said, well, yeah, because back then there were a lot of Westerns being made. You had the different kinds of adventures. They didn't have to do that in this one. They could just concentrate on what they're doing. And when you have a newer Western, they want to get in all the stuff they love.
Mm.
And really, if they're making a fairly straight remake, other than, you know, all the stuff they're adding, I would think it would detract from the basic story. Not having seen it, I don't know.
Oh, that's a great point.
So, 310 to Yuma.
What's it about?
Well, it's a pretty quiet little story, actually. And it's about a father of a family. He and his sons come across a stagecoach being held up because their cattle have been taken to provide a diversion to stop the stagecoach. And a gang of outlaws led by Glenn Ford, whose name is Wade, is holding them up. And they go up. They see them there. They go up to talk to them and say, just stay out of the way. There's no problem. And the little boys are that hero-worshipping age. They're like, come on, Dad, we've got to do something. The father's like, what could I possibly do other than get us killed? Nothing. So he just stays out of it. The kids are disappointed, especially the young one. And in the scuffle, the stagecoach driver gets killed. The outlaws go on. They set the horses free or take them with them so that no one can move the stagecoach. They go into town and pretend to be someone else. Sheriff, this happened. We were just driving by. So the sheriff goes out of town. They're there for a while with the saloon girl, fairly politely.
Mm-hmm.
And then in comes the father, who's going to borrow money from the bank because there has been a drought for a long time. And if they could just hold out for 6 months, surely it will rain, but he needs to borrow the money. So he comes in, has a conversation, and winds up helping arrest the main outlaw. Mm-hmm. And from there, it kind of really turns into they've got to get the outlaw to a town that they hope the his gang won't think about because his gang has been sent off somewhere else. That's how they could arrest him. Yeah. And the whole thing is about, can they outwit the gang so that they won't say, oh my gosh, he's been taken to this town and we'll get him back by force, and can justice be served?
Excellent.
And yeah. And so there's only two people who will do it. One is the town drunk. One is this father, because he can't borrow the money he needs. And they're going to offer a reward that is exactly the amount he needs. But of course, his wife is worried and upset about it. She doesn't want him to get killed. And that's very likely. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of almost kind of spins into a, you would think it's a High Noon scenario, but it really isn't. It's a psychological battle between these two. The smooth outlaw and the honest, straightforward, but troubled and worried rancher.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if that's a good summary, but that's
no,
where
it's
we
an
are.
Excellent summary. Yep, like it.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's a terrific movie. Really is great. It's very well worth watching. Yep.
It's surprisingly powerful.
I agree with you. Yeah.
Especially once they get to whatever that town is. Is it called Desperation or something?
Contention. Yeah.
Contention. Even worse. Ooh, could that be symbolic?
Yeah.
Once they get to Contention, you really get caught up in the arguments that the outlaw is making. They're in an upper bedroom, squirreled away in the hotel, waiting for time to go to the train. And he is making offer after offer after logical argument after logical argument to try to get set loose. Bribery, lies, flattery.
Mm.
And he's very smooth. You can see
he's extreme. He's got the Kevorka, that's for sure. No doubt.
I had to look up the Kevorka after you mentioned that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's just so smooth. The scene with the barmaid was actually kind of mesmerizing. You know, when she's like walking back and forth, pouring everybody drinks kind of constantly for a while. It's really graceful. It's almost hypnotic. And he sends everybody away and then he comes back in there. Yeah, it was really well done. Really
he's
well
starting
done.
To leave with the gang. And then he says, he kind of pauses and he's like, okay, everybody go to Matagorda or somewhere like that. I'll meet you.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes back in.
And he puts himself in danger. Yeah. And how smooth he was too with the sheriff. Mm-hmm. You know, you should wake up the sheriff because some stuff happened. And then that was interesting. You know, why did they even do that?
Yeah.
You know, why didn't they just move on? But it seems like they didn't want them to die of thirst out there or whatever.
He almost, you want to like him, actually.
It's hard hard not to, yeah.
Yeah, he's charming. He seems to care. He's like, you know, no one had to be killed. That wasn't my fault.
Mm.
And, of course, what you realize when you think back on it, it was absolutely his fault. Oh, spoilers, everyone.
Well, that happens at the very beginning, right?
Yeah, at the very beginning when there is the scuffle and the stagecoach driver has gotten a hold of one of his men and he's holding him in front of him as a shield. And he says, if you don't go away, leave us alone, I'm going to kill this guy. And Glenn Ford, without even thinking about it, pulls out his gun and shoots through his man so he can kill the guy behind him.
Hmm.
And then he's like, oh, sorry, man, you know, to his guy. Oh, yeah. That's you'll be all right. I think he just winged you or whatever. But you're just like, but later on he's going, you know, that wasn't my fault. He should have done what we said. And you really believe him until you think back on it.
Yeah. And then it was interesting too, at the saloon, his second in command, toasts mm-hmm. him and says, yep, if he hadn't have done that, you know, so he was making the argument that everybody was thinking.
Yes.
You know, it says, if he hadn't have done that, you know, there'd be more of us dead.
And he kind of, yeah, he was essentially doing an apologetics for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Here's why he shot his own guy. He just right. shut it down. But on the other hand, as you say, it's he doesn't seem to want unnecessary death. He tells the guy and his two kids, you just stay up here. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about it. He does.
And they witnessed the murder, right? They witnessed that right. happen and they right. he didn't.
Yeah, he didn't go back them. And wipe yeah. them out. He didn't kill everybody in the stagecoach. They've all seen their faces. They're not wearing masks. And he does send them, as you say, he does seem to worry that they might die mm-hmm. on the stagecoach if people aren't sent back to help. So he's a really odd blend of, it's not that he cares about the people, but he doesn't want unnecessary death and suffering. Mm-hmm. He's willing to do it.
Yeah.
But he'd just rather get his way a different way.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Fascinating, and he is so mm-hmm. charming.
He really is. Yeah, he really is. And throughout the whole thing, yeah, I can't remember seeing Glenn Ford like this. I don't know no. if I saw a movie from the 50s with him in it. Can't think of one off the top of my head anyway.
No, that's what fascinated me is I remember seeing him just kind of peripherally growing up. You'd see Westerns and he'd be in them, but he was always the good guy.
Mm.
And he was always kind of the hill fellow, well-met, bluff, you know. There was nothing requiring subtlety about the things that I remember.
Mm.
And he may have been in parts like that. I just haven't seen them. But in this, that's why I was mesmerized. I was like, first of all, he's playing a bad guy. Second of all, dang, I'm not sure I wouldn't have given him the gun. He was making some convincing arguments.
Yeah, and that's part of the fascination of it is, mm-hmm. well, it's the whole thing really is those two guys. You know, they're, you know, contrasting them both and, you know, the decisions that each one makes. Yeah, and their motivations for doing so are really interesting.
Yeah, they're both the main movers of the action, really.
Yeah.
Because without a second person to take Wade to contention, all they would have had was the town drunk. It couldn't have happened.
Mm.
And so even though he seems like he's the good guy who's, gosh, why can't I remember his name?
Which the good guy is?
The farmer.
Yeah, the farmer is Dan Evans.
Dan.
Played by Van Heflin.
Who I don't know who he is.
Yeah, yeah. I don't remember seeing him elsewhere, but he was really good.
Yeah, he was. And it was one of those things where he, I liked it because they looked so normal. Like, he wasn't ugly, but he wasn't good looking.
Mm.
His wife was kind of pretty, but it was regular pretty.
Mm.
The kids were just normal looking kids, you know?
Yeah.
So it was a regular family. You were definitely shown. And at the beginning, his arc is interesting because at the beginning, he is kind of being not twitted, but the comments that his youngest son is making to when they get back to the home. And he's like, well, this would have happened, but Dad said no. And then when the outlaw is there having dinner and he's like, my dad wants to shoot you. He wants his father to be the hero, the classic hero. And the wife kind of says, what, you didn't do anything? So she immediately drops it. But right there is the condemnation. He's not the hero.
Yeah.
And the ranch isn't doing well.
Yeah. And the refrain is, what was it? Standing and doing nothing or something like that. I can't remember what the sentence was, but there was a sentence that was used a couple times. Are you going to, you know, be still and do nothing or something like that?
Yeah, we can't just do nothing.
Yeah, we just can't do nothing. Yeah, and he's feeling like helpless, you know. It's like, well, on that particular thing, if I had done something, I'd be dead now.
Yeah.
And he knows it, right?
Yeah.
But yet, you know, these people are pummeling him about it, you know. And then the other thing with his ranch, it's kind of a pride issue where he's like, yeah, I could go get this loan. But we don't need help. You know, we just need it to rain. We just need to get past this time and then we're going to be fine. And, but you know, something that he could do to make things better is something that he wasn't taking a step to do. But then he was moved to go ahead and do that, which is why he ended up in town in the first place, right? He's like, yeah maybe I need to go do something. Yeah. Maybe I need to go do something. I need to swallow this a little bit. Go get that $200 as a loan. And then now I can use this water. And now my cattle will survive till it rains. Rather than just waiting, right?
Yeah, he can buy some rights to take his cattle to somebody else's creek.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Water rights. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I hadn't really thought about the whole pride issue because he's driven by pride not to do it. His wife talks him into it, so he gives in. And then once he's given in, he's kind of given in all the way because he goes ahead and distracts Wade so that the sheriff can creep up behind him. And he does it by saying, well, you never paid me. You know, I lost a day's work.
Yeah. And he's kind of
just dropping coins like.
That was an awesome scene. Oh, man. Yeah. I loved it. And then the very last thing he says, you know, and the guy's like, you know, anything else? Because they know, I mean, I love those scenes where there's just, it's like they both know what's really going on, but neither of them are saying it. And Glenn Ford is like, let me go, you know, just let me walk. And, you know, the other guy is like, I just need to keep you here for a minute, you know, but, Ben Wade knows that he's caught.
Right.
But he's just like, you know, this is just let me go. This is your best interest.
In his eyes. Yeah. And he's like, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah.
You'll be dead.
You're going to be dead. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And at the very end, I loved Dan Evans's line where he said, well, you could give me two more for making me nervous.
And that's the first time.
That was such a good line.
Yes. And that's the first time he really strikes a fake note and he kind of has this nervous laugh and you look at him going, what? And that's when you see Glenn Ford going, damn it.
Yeah.
I now know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then you hear him begging for a loan and the outlaw hears it.
So yeah, and that was interesting too. That happened right in front of the outlaw.
Yeah,
it just the contrast between these two because you know it. I don't know if we need to worry about spoilers, but there's I think that they saw in each other things that they wanted it to be, right? Mm-hmm. So Dan Evans. His kids and everything kind of see him as a Ben Wade kind of, you know, in this hero worship thing. Yeah. It's like, yeah, you know, if my dad wanted to be Ben Wade, he could, you know, he could be the, sheriff, you know,
be a hero. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. He could be a gunslinger and in their eyes, you know, he kind of is one.
Yeah.
And Glenn Ford, in my opinion, kind of sees in the family situation of Dan Evans something very appealing. It's like this is something that he has that not money can't buy.
Yeah.
And it's appealing to me. And I feel like that was key to understand the end.
Yeah, and by the end, you do see it. And that was kind of a thread I found interesting watching it the second time, especially is because there isn't a reason. Well, okay, there's an obvious reason for him to hang out with the pretty saloon girl after he sends his guys away.
Yeah.
That's made very clear when they just, oh, come back here. Oh, here we are coming out of the back room. And you're just like, oh my goodness. But the way he's talking to her is not, I don't know. It's almost as if he wants an actual attachment to her.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
Remembering the name of somebody that he knew and liked that she also knew and liked in Dodge City. He is talking about, and I'll send you something nice and you won't remember me. Oh, I'll remember you. And so I couldn't see a reason for him to, I mean, you know, of course there's the easy lay part, but he seemed to be wanting more. A little bit more than he didn't have to do any smooth talk like that and hang around because that's what got him caught. So then when he's with the family, you know, he's not really giving a lot away, but he is kind of soft, smooth talking the wife. And she's responding, you know, because we can't see her eyes because it's black and white. But he's talking about, oh, I knew somebody from San Francisco. She was a sea captain's daughter and she had the most beautiful green eyes and she's smiling. And the husband's like, come out here on the porch. I don't care for this one bit. Don't listen to him.
Yeah.
And
yeah. And that was part of his insecurity. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, but also she's responding. She's caught up for a minute because, you know,
he's got the Kevorka. What are you going to say?
He's got the Kevorka. Explain Kevorka for everybody.
Oh, it's from Seinfeld. I have no idea if it's a real thing or not. I doubt it, but it just means animal magnetism.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And Kramer had the Kevorka.
And so at that point, you kind of go, well, we've already seen there's a bit of strife between them. Not bad, but, you know, she's unhappy with the way things are. The husband's not feeling the best about himself. And, but then toward the end of the movie, there's the scene that I know you must have been thinking about when you were saying it, is she comes to find him.
Mm-hmm.
She says, don't do this. You know, don't take him to that train. You're going to get killed. And they're right outside the open door. And she's going, I don't care. It's all worth it. Every bit of pain, every bit of misery, every, you know, this and that. I love it. I love all of it. I love you, basically. Mm-hmm. I love our life together. It doesn't matter. And what they've been saying to each other a little is, and when it's green, everything will be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And you see the look on Wade's face as he's listening. And it was so beautifully done. I mean, it was just... he'd been kind of slapped. Silly.
Yeah.
It was like, he was like, oh my gosh, I don't think he'd ever seen that from people before. You know?
I don't think so either. And I think that became his goal at that time. You know, I think it was building it the whole time, but it was almost a realization of, this is what I really want. You know, I want something like that. And after the entire time that he was talking to Dan Evans, trying to get him, you know, it was up to 10 grand or something like that. You know, it went from $400 to 10 grand. And Dan Evans is obviously in anguish. You know, he's like, oh, you know, I could just do this. I could live. I could, you know, but he chooses not to do that. And that had to impress Glenn Ford as well, or Ben Wade. So it was like, he realized that, well, what was important to Dan Evans, and it wasn't money.
And also, here's somebody he couldn't sway.
Right.
He might have been tempted, but the power of his persuasion ultimately did not work. He had something deeper and more anchored. And just in being the quiet man, even though he wanted to stay out of trouble, he didn't want to do, you know, he didn't want to get involved. He wasn't the one who was going to be the hero. But there was something of more value there.
Mm.
And that's what culminates in a marriage like that, too.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why by the time he gets through the town, when Dan Evans is like, nope, not going to quit. I'm going to do it because I said I'd do it.
Yeah.
And that's why he can't stand to see him get shot at the end.
Yeah.
You know.
Right. Yeah. I'm with you. That was a surprise to me.
Yeah.
it was just like, what? You know, really? But, you know, I think that it worked. I think it worked. Because of that.
The last second.
Yeah.
Because he wouldn't give up. He's like, well, you have to give up now.
Yeah.
There's like, my whole gang's there.
And even like, then he wouldn't. Yeah.
We're doing it. He's like, oh, all right. Can't let you die.
Yeah. All he had to do was fall on the ground and Dan Evans would have been dead.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't. Right. He
says, let's jump.
Yep.
And he shoots his own guy, right?
He does. Yep. Yeah. Because his motivations are different. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of amazing, you know? So, anyway, it was very moving, I thought.
Yeah. Well, and something here, there are a couple things that I thought were really interesting. One is, the reason that Dan Evans gives his wife for not quitting is, he says, the town drunk gave his life because he thought people should be able to live together in decency and peace. And that town drunk was pretty much good for nothing. He didn't like his wife. She was a piece of work. You know, he was just doing it to get money for more drinking. But he's the one who's like, well, we said we'd do it. We're going to do it. When the guy who runs the state or who owns the stagecoach line is backing down going, I will pay you not to do this. Do not put your life in danger. It's now 3 to however many, 8 or 10. Yeah. All the people in the town leave. And he's like, nope, still doing it. Why? Because this guy sacrificed his own life.
Mm.
You know, he didn't walk down the street going, come on, I'll take anybody on. But by being who he was, you know, by being there and trying to stop them and doing what he thought everybody was doing, he was the example. His life was not going to be given in vain.
That's powerful.
Mm-hmm. And then the other thing, and this is the thing that I still was thinking of from the beginning when the first time I saw it, is for me, Wade, Glenn Ford, he's like the serpent in the Garden of Eden.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say that same thing.
Oh, okay.
I love it. No, go. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
I love it.
He says, I work quietly like you at one point. And I don't remember. I should have noted who, too. But he's tempting every angle.
Yeah. He said that to Dan Evans.
Okay.
He said, I work quietly like you.
Okay.
You know, because Dan Evans is a quiet guy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And you know, and he was saying, you know, we're the same. We're the same, you know?
Right.
And, you know, that was Dan Evans' struggle is, you know, I could be like this. You know, I just imagine him thinking, you know, I could be in his gang and probably be rich, you know?
Well,
and, you know, all these thoughts went through his head.
And Glenn Ford keeps saying no one would ever know.
Yeah.
It'd just be our little deal. That's he's like, no one would ever know. Oh, crap.
Hmm.
You know, now I got to deal with this temptation. So there's this temptation from every angle. And every so often when Dan would say no, you know, something would jolt him back to consciousness somehow of who he was and what was happening and kind of draw him out from under the spell. And you just see this flash of anger for just a second in Wade's eyes.
Yeah.
And then he'd kind of collect himself and go right back to a different angle.
Hmm.
You know, and so what that made me think of was, and this could be a bit pushing it, but that's what I saw is, so you have the serpent. He's tempting and tempting and tempting. There's no help for Dan to help him resist. And then his wife shows up. And he articulates his reasons. She loves him no matter what. Please don't do this. And he says, no. And when it's green, we'll be happy again. And I was thinking about it going, right. So you've got the man and the woman. They're facing all these temptations and these struggles. And it's so dry. And then at the end of the movie, it's raining. And what happens when it rains? It becomes green again. It turns into a garden. So you have this analogy of the serpent tempting the man and tempting the woman, and they return to the garden because they resisted.
Yeah. Yeah, that's powerful, powerful stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, yeah. When it started raining, you know, it was good.
Yeah.
You're like, and oh, it rained.
And I love the fact that she's out there just like, I need to see if they're on the train.
Mm.
You know,
yeah.
She's, you know, with him to the end.
Right, right.
Essentially.
Yeah. But yeah, I really like that idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that, you know, they successfully resisted in the garden. Yeah.
Yeah, and like you say, it's that strong marriage that shakes and changes Wade.
Mm-hmm.
It's the reversal of the fall, essentially. They win the victory and the rain begins.
Mm. In a Western, amazing. Love it.
Well, Westerns, they say, are morality tales, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, you know, Westerns always strike me, you know, It's a lawless atmosphere, right? You know, there's usually a sheriff, right? But it's like that sheriff is on his own. It's not like he can call the SWAT team or something like that, you know. There's no backup coming.
Yeah.
You know, so it's people against people alone, you know, without society's assistance. You know, it's...
Yeah, you're just depending on the community, and they all just kind of go, oh, that's it, we're done.
Yeah.
What, you guys couldn't just, why? You're in the hotel. They'd have to storm it. What's your problem here? You know.
That's right. And he goes out and he finds five guys to help, and they're all, yeah, this is nuts. We're going to go ahead and go.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not going to.
It's not really my fight.
Yeah. I think I'm going to die here. Mm-hmm. I don't want to. Yeah. Because they're not feeling that. You know, yeah, it's not their fight. That's exactly the right way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It reminded me a little bit of Three Godfathers when they were trying to figure out which town they were going to and stuff.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, because the Three Godfathers were kind of making the same thing. Well, they're going to go there, then they're going to go there, so we should go here.
Yeah.
And it's almost the same conversation where they're like, you know, Bisbee and contention. Yeah. They're trying to figure out where to go.
No, they'll and think then, we'll go to Bisbee.
But yeah, but this gang is brilliant. They sent one to everywhere.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. They're like, they're not dumb.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and that was something that it made me think. So they're basing they're driving some of the plot based on our assumptions about Westerns. Oh, the whole gang went there. They'll never figure it out. Well, no, they're smart. He's been arrested. They'll send somebody to everywhere, like you say. And so one of the other assumptions they make, and this is kind of what sucks us in with Wade, is he's so charming, as we've said, and they kind of set it up at the beginning because he's nice to women.
Hmm.
He's a romantic.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but what we forget is just because you're nice to pretty women doesn't mean you're a good person.
Right.
You know, yep. Or because you send people back to not, you know, I don't want them to die of thirst or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And at one point, doesn't he say to Dan, doesn't he say, I don't like owing anyone any favors?
Yeah, I don't remember that for sure.
And I thought that was at the end.
Mm-hmm. Oh, at the end when he's in the train car?
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah, he could have.
Because I was just thinking that kind of goes directly opposite to the point you're making, which is that Dan had to go against his pride in order to come into town and ask for money and
yeah, there it is.
Take care of his family.
So you're right. The very last lines. Why did you do it, Ben? Says Dan Evans. Ben Wade, I don't like owing anybody any favors. You saved my life back at the hotel. That's all right. I've broken out of Yuma before.
I did like that. I've broken out of Yuma before.
Well, my job's finished when I get you there. I don't care if you break out anything, right? That's what he says. Yeah. My job's finished when I get you there. He's like, I'm not going to watch you for the rest of my life.
Right. Yeah. Because that was the job he was hired for.
Right, right.
And he stood up as he needed to.
Yeah. That's interesting, because I don't think that was his motivation.
No.
I don't think that was Ben Wade's. I don't think he was telling the
truth.
That's
just what he said. And that's they knew that. That's why Dan says, well, I'm not going to watch you anymore. Once we get there and I turn you over, that's it. Hmm. Because they have a grudging admiration for each other at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. They yeah.
Like, I'm going on with my life now.
Mm. Yeah, and understanding, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and he saved him. He didn't have to.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, yeah, Ben Wade had to respect that, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and so once again, since it's our morality tale, you have might versus right. But the way that they talk about it is just, you know, it's really, I hadn't seen anything like it before.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know that I have either. I just thought it was just so incredibly well done. You know, the scenes between those two, it was just amazing, you know. And I could feel the anguish from Dan Evans, too. I thought that actor did a really good job, like we said before. But, you know, and then Ben Wade just keeps upping the price, you know. You know, I'll offer you $7,000. And then he says, and you know what? It won't be 7,000. It's going to be 10 because that's easier. I count in tens, you know?
Well, that's the thing where I was starting to go, do you have 10,000?
Yeah. I was wondering the same thing, you know, how much money has he got? But it was like an astronomical amount of money, you know?
Oh yeah.
And, Yeah, you had to wonder, is he really that rich? I have no idea. Absolutely no idea. Certainly.
And the fact that he keeps upping it shows you that even though he's not displaying it, his desperation is increasing.
Yeah.
I'll give you more than you can imagine. And at that point, we're, you know, it's like out in the desert with Jesus up on the mountaintop.
Yeah.
All this can be yours.
That's right. That's
right. All you have to do is bow down.
All you have to do. That's right. Yep.
And I
had the same, similar thoughts right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Well, that's, you know, you got to say Genesis and the New Testament, you know, the Gospels, they contain so many core stories about who we are and why we do things, you know, good and bad.
Right, right.
You know, aren't you going to do something? I mean, sometimes standing up and doing something is not the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Sometimes it means swallowing your pride and going to ask for a loan, even though you don't want to.
And sometimes it means not running into a place where you're going to die.
Yeah.
which is funny, you know. Well, I say funny. It's interesting when you contrast the beginning with the end.
Mm-hmm.
How at the beginning, he had his two kids with him, too. You know, it's like, I'm not going to go wade in there.
Yeah.
And then at the end, it was like, well, I'm going to go wade in there. You know, it was the same group of people that he was taking on both times.
Yeah, but by the end, it's down to his own, I think, sense of himself as a man. Who am I?
Yeah, yeah.
Do I keep my word?
Yeah.
This guy kept his word. I'm not even as good as this guy.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Then it's about, you know, each person in different ways, and we do it in smaller ways usually, I think.
But yeah, yeah.
It's, we come down to the decisions we make and who are we. And we have those little temptations, and it doesn't have to be, you know, the serpent.
Mm.
Sometimes it might be kind of pushing us to even think about it, but we can do it to ourselves.
Yeah, it's a daily battle though, isn't it? You know,
isn't it though?
You know, and that's what confession helps us to take care of. But yes, it's right like, you know, you can't help but to think that if he had made that decision to take that $10,000, right?
Yeah.
His life would not have been green.
No.
You know, it's going to be something wrong with it. You know, something was going to be wrong. And it's because he knows, you know, nobody knows. Well, he knows.
Yeah.
Right.
And he would have
and
been
it's gonna taint everything.
Cast out of the garden at that point.
Exactly.
His relationship with his wife would never have been the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
With his kids.
And it is that thing where you know, like when you have clarity in a relationship, meaning, you know, there's no impediments and you're honest and you don't have anything hidden. And then you hide stuff.
Yeah.
And then that's when things start to go bad. Because you know, it's like when you need to think when you talk, you know, you need to sometimes go through a few things like, okay, you know, if you're hiding something is what I'm saying, you're like calculating in everything that you say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it can be felt, right? But anyway, yeah, the relationship is just no longer clear, you know, and that's kind of what I see there. It's like, you know, if he had done that, it's just like his whole family, you know, he's not who they think he is anymore. I guess that's really the point.
Right.
You know.
And they're already struggling with who he is.
Right, right.
You know, when he's not the knight in shining armor who goes in to save everyone.
And everybody thinks that he is.
Right. That's the thing.
You were a big hero. You stayed there and man, he got away. But man, you were... That was incredible what you did. Well,
in the
no, it wasn't really. You know, I kind of rich now.
Yeah, and how do you explain that?
Yeah, well,
you can't.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with you. I don't think he had 10 grand. I think he probably had 400. You know.
Yeah.
So he would have had the money he needed, double what he needed.
Yeah.
Yep. But he would have sold a lot more to do that.
He would never have come back and given it to him.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he would have had no reward and the shame of knowing what he'd done.
Mm-hmm.
And that guy would show up and, you know, twit him with it. We know how he is.
In,
here's a little.
In the 310 to Yuma part 2.
Oh my goodness. I think that's why I saw that there was a remake, and was when I was reading through it, I was like, no, this one is too perfect. I don't need to see another one.
Yeah, it really was excellent. Yeah.
Good. I'm glad you liked
it. Yeah, just a gem. Another one. Another gem that you found.
Well,
1957. It was
we
great.
We can thank my mom for continually saying how good it was.
You got to watch the 310 to Yuma. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it. Like, but this is a keeper. It's another movie I'll return to for sure.
Yeah, it's just one for the pool room.
It's one for the pool room. Yep, yep.
It's kind of the essence of the Western.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. So, can you think of any other Glenn Ford movies that jump out? Because I'm interested now. I want to see what else he's done.
Yeah. I don't know. Hold on. Let me.
Glenn Ford. Yeah. So he passed away in 2006 at age 90. His last movie was in 1991. Called Raw Nerve.
My goodness. His filmography is just insane. Giant.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, Gilda. I've heard of that. And that's, or maybe I've seen that.
Gilda, Guadalcanal. So he's doing, I don't know, kind of like John Wayne, you know, westerns and World War II's. And,
film noir.
Yeah.
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 And I just remember seeing him in various westerns, which that was such a big genre of the time.
Hmm.
Oh my gosh, he was in The Courtship of Eddie's Father, which I watched as a TV show.
Hmm.
I never saw the movie. I guess that dates me. Bill Bixby, who was later the Hulk on a TV show.
Yes. The Hulk. The Incredible Hulk.
Yes, The Incredible Hulk. Anyway, yeah, so he was in a zillion movies. You'd have to do something looking around saying, what are his best movies?
Yeah, yeah.
But clearly he was used in a wide range of movies, doing all kinds of things. Because in Gilda, he was a thug. You know, The Courtship of Eddie's Father, he's clearly got to be Eddie's father. So he's, you know, the wife died. So here he is. Stuck with the little kid. Well, you know, not stuck with him, but how do I take care of the little kid and so forth?
Yeah.
But I don't think he could ever do better than this movie.
Yeah. It really was excellent. He was really good in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody else was good, but his performance is what made it, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
If
we didn't believe him, it wouldn't have been any good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody lesser just couldn't have really done it, I think.
Yeah, and that's where I think that the new one fell down. Haven't only watched, you know, the last half hour again. But it's like, when you do a remake and miss the point of the original is just really strange.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's a spoiler, you know, so in the new one, Dan dies on the way to the train.
What?
Can you believe it?
No.
He dies right outside the train.
Oh, no.
And then, let's see, what's his name? Well, it's Ben Wade, the guy who plays Ben Wade.
So is it
Christian Bale?
No.
Christian Bale is Dan Wade and,
Russell Crowe.
Russell Crowe, right. Russell Crowe is... So he ends up... He kills the whole gang.
What? Because
he's an amazing gunslinger, right? After they kill Dan, he kills the whole gang. And then gets on the train and puts himself in the cell. There's a cell on the train. Gives his gun to the guy that's running the train.
Uh-huh.
He gives his gun to that guy and then puts himself in the cell and sits down.
What happened? I don't even understand what you're talking about. This makes no sense at all.
Yeah.
So. I guess we would have had to see the beginning, but like you say, talk about missing the point.
Yeah, yeah.
Just makes me even happier that I didn't.
Wouldn't it be cool if we could have an end where he kills his entire gang with some really cool gunplay?
Then
that's what is the germ of the idea, I would think.
Yeah.
It's going to look so awesome when we do this.
Well, yeah, once again, it's just not.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the idea, it's the modernization, of course, but it's also that idea of, look, I've got this neat new toy. Let me play with it. It's called a Western.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll put everything in it. And the irony. No, thank you.
Terrific movie. Really great.
It's not a very long movie, and the moral is out there clearly told, but it's just so wonderfully told. And the way it unfolds is just mesmerizing.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. So what's coming up now? Let's see. It's Pancakes.
Ooh, breakfast?
Yeah, Pancakes in Paris by Craig Carlson. Yeah. This is a nonfiction book that I just loved, and then it was funny because I found out that you had read it after I had read it, and you liked it too. Because it's about this guy who opens a American diner in Paris
called Breakfast in America. As the French themselves admit, if there's one thing that the Americans can get right about food, it is totally breakfast. Yeah.
We're good at that. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, it's a good book.
That is good. I knew we were good at something. I knew it. Something good in the culinary world.
Indeed. Yeah.
That is funny. American cuisine.
I'm not sure if they'd apply the word cuisine, but yes.
You bet. Okay. All right. Well, wonderful. Well, thank you so much for this movie. And thanks for listening, everybody. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye-bye.